Carbon, your age. So we, I first of all, I hope, and if it, I hope that some of the things that Rosenzweig talked about yesterday sounded familiar. If they didn't, I have failed miserably in teaching these sugyot, because if you didn't recognize some of the concepts about lishma and shinui kodesh and shinui bialim, are they different? Are they the same? Is Shinui Bialim the primary category? Is Shinui Kodesh the same? If none of that sounded familiar, then I don't know what I've been doing. So just nod your head and tell me that it sounded familiar. Oh, good, good, very good. I'm glad. I'm glad. You were in Regensburgshire, so it's okay. Because I know you did different sugyot, so that's forgivable. You're welcome. Good. So now to Karban Yoresh. So. We were up to Yatvi Rav Nachman at the bottom of Hamad Bet. Yatvi Rav Nachman Rav Sheshet V'yatvi Rav Ada Bar Matna Gabayu V'yatvi Rav Kamayu Hadik Mar Lozer Matzina V'ban Lachar Mita Shen Kshenim V'Ratzin. So that which we said, that there are things that are brought after death, that they are kosher, but they don't provide forgiveness. Lemele Reish Lakish Hanu Nami Laitu V'lir. So why doesn't Reish Lakish say, why don't you bring these karbanot and let them be mechaper for the Yershim? So the Gemara says, so why don't you bring it after death, right? And and let the heirs, get some sort of kapara. So Amarlan Ravada Ramadna, Yuledet Imhi Yolda Banam Yaladu. So the Gemara says, no, it can't be. It cannot be that the carbon can be brought, here's pass this to Benjamin. That this can be brought after death. Because the mother may have given birth, but did the child give birth such that she should bring a karban yoledet? And yes, Shlomo, I will allow you to scream as you did in Seder, which is, how do you know that a yoledet brings a karban?
Because it's a pasuk.
It's a pasuk, thank you. I really hope all of you knew that. And if you didn't, you did. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. See, there are times, I know I have ranted about lies. Right now is where you're supposed to lie to me for my mental health. And just tell me, yes, we knew that. Okay? Good, good. Just let's just lie and say that you knew that. Just nod and nod yes. We knew that was a pasuk. So, Matkila Ravasi. So Ravasi says, Uman le malandi ika kama ase gabalo mit kapra. V'cheven di ika ka... Kamo ase gaba michapra yorshea nami mechaper. Servazi says no. Maybe what will happen that if a woman has several violations of mitzvot ase for which she needs to atone, so she doesn't atone by bringing the karban, meaning she does. What does that mean? That even when you bring a karban, it's true that what's the primary reason the woman is bringing the karban yoledet? Because she gave birth. But, as we've talked about, there are the sins which require their own karban, like chatat, and if someone violates Shabbat by accident, so then they bring karban chatat. But then there are the sins that do not warrant their own karbanot, like, as the Gemara says here, the failure to perform a mitzvah asay, and how do you get kapara? So we say that you get some level of kapara, and again, that's what we're going to analyze more in the next, in the continuing sugyot. You get, when you bring an ola, you get a certain amount of atonement for these sins, which don't actually warrant their own karban. For mitzvah asay, or in some of the midrashim, for here hurei avera, right, thoughts of sin and things like that. So the Gemara says, well, listen, when the woman brings the karban, there are secondary atonements that come along with the primary atonement. Sure.
Is it the woman who goes and brings the karban, or is it
I mean, it's brought, I mean, the Kohen brings it.
Right, but who brings it to the victim of the child?
Whoever.
Is she able to?
Yes. Yes. So the Gemara says, well, if there are these secondary levels of kaparot, so then shouldn't the heirs also be allowed to bring the karban? Because even if it's true that they're not getting kapara for the primary thing, meaning in this case, the heirs didn't give birth and therefore they're in chayiv and karban yoledet, maybe they should bring the karban. Maybe they should bring the karban and they'll get the secondary kapara. Okay, good. So Evan already says, well, how could they do that? Meaning, it's very nice that they're secondary kapara, but this is a very specific ola, which is brought for a specific purpose. So, really? You have a havamina that you could bring a specific ola only for the secondary purposes? That's a little bit weird, right? Meaning, it's one thing to say that ola is a general gift of a karban that accomplishes some level of kapara in the background, which, again, that's the next major sugya that I want to do, is analyze the kapara of ola. It's one thing to say that that's true, and therefore, maybe you're allowed to bring voluntary olot, and they'll trigger certain amounts of kapara and stuff like that. But Evan correctly notes that, as we've seen, the more specific a karban is, the less flexibility you have in the karban. So, really, you think it's true that a ola is somewhat generic and has the potential to do what? To provide kapara on things that are a little bit amorphous and less pinned down and stuff like that. But a karban yoledet, you would have thought that it is a karban yoledet. And therefore, it has a primary identity. And the fact that there are secondary things happening doesn't make it that that's enough of a reason to bring it to begin with. Right? Very good. And now Evan says, it must be that that's what we're learning, is it's not true. Right? It's not true. That apparently the way the Gemara is conceptualizing it is not, and this is a very subtle distinction, is that you might have thought that the fact that you bring this karban for a yoledet makes it that the karban is defined as a specific karban. Kamash malan, that it might not be. It might be more that what? You have a specific obligation to bring a generic karban. Right? And that's not the same, right? That isn't the same. Right. So, like, for example, you can say that it is Avi's birthday. It's not, but you could say it's Avi's birthday, and therefore, I am going to bring Avi a present. Okay? That means there's a very specific mechayev for what I am bringing, right? Namely, his birthday. It is a birthday present. But nevertheless, if I bring something generic that doesn't, you know, have Avi's name emblazoned on it, Avi can, because I'm not so good at giving presents, re-gift it. Right? It's not crazy to say that there's such a thing where there's a very specific mechayev, but nevertheless, that which is actually brought has a generic identity. And not chata, correct. But Evan's havamina was that Evan is saying that clearly what's going on in the Gemara is you might have thought that a karban yoledet, because it has a specific specific trigger, that means that the karban itself takes on a specific identity. And if that's the case, then yes, there should be very little flexibility, and someone who didn't give birth shouldn't be allowed to bring it. But clearly the Gemara isn't convinced of that svara, and he thinks of it more like a generic birthday present where the trigger is specific. Namely, it's Avi's birthday, which it isn't, but it is, okay? But it nevertheless can be regifted because the present that I give is generic, and apparently because Avi is regifting it, either bad or so obviously on target that all of his friends thought to give him the exact same thing, and therefore he has too many of them. Likely with me, it'll be a bad gift. Likely.
I'm not the best.
That is a skill set, being a really good gift giver. There are certain people that are really good at it and certain people that are not. I never am good with the gift thing. I just don't know what to do with gifts. The only gifts I know how to buy are books. That is it. I know how to deal with books. You know, I'm really, otherwise, I'm really, really bad at it. You know, I need people to tell me what they want. I'm just not, I'm not good at it. You kidding? Who was it who came with me last year? Who came to me to the souk last year? You did, right?
Yeah.
And I just had Ura on the thing because right? It was you, right? Yeah, because I was like, I don't know. I want to get you something here, but I don't know what. So we're going to keep you on video chat, and then you can tell us exactly what you want.
I don't know. I just don't like any other people's books. After a book, you're like, that's a bad gift. I'm like, no.
It's a great gift. Books are great gifts.
Really,
for me, it's great because Ura doesn't let me buy books, right? But she can't stop me from acquiring books that are gifted to me. I still don't have room in my shelves, but she can't stop
it.
Yeah, so that's why I don't usually buy them. But still, that doesn't mean I do not have an incurable addiction, you know?
Yeah.
So, what? Not soon. Lememra. So now the Gemara says, Lememra de Kanya Lehu. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So now you've established that an Ola has a secondary identity, and therefore it's not insane that the heirs should bring the Karban. Now the Gemara gets to our key problem. Lememra de Kanya Lehu? Does that mean that the heirs acquire it? Because there's two questions. How do you define the karban? And the second is, to whom does the karban belong? So the Gemara says, wait. More fundamental problem is, how is the heir bringing the karban? Does the heir own it? Va'amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan said that he niach mincha l'shnei vanav, that if someone left a meal offering for two children, umate, and then the father dies, kreva, it is offered. The ein bo shutafut, but it does not have the status of being owned by partners. What does that imply? That who owns it? No. The father, very good. The dead guy. The dead guy owns it. And then you'll tell me, no, maybe it's being brought by the sons. How do you know that the father is the owner and not the sons? The isagadag de kanyalu, maybe you'll think that it is brought by the kids. It's impossible. Why is it impossible? Because mincha is a halacha that is unique, different from animal karbanot. And that is, a mincha cannot be brought b'shutafut. Partnership. A mincha is only allowed to have one owner. It cannot be brought as a partnership. Nefesh amar rachmana. That's the next line. That it has to be brought by a soul, by a person, which means that this karban must not be owned by the heirs, because if it is owned by the heirs, then maybe it would work. But at this point, the Gemara is bringing a case with two sons, but it can't be owned by the heirs, because if it was owned by the heirs, it would be de facto invalid because it would be a minchat hashutfen. So doesn't that show that the heirs don't inherit the karban? And if they don't inherit the karban, it can't atone for their sins. Where it says, velo kanya lehu? Where it says, wait, what? How can you say they don't acquire it? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, hiniach behema l'shnei vanav, that if you left an animal offering to two sons, and then the father died, kreva, it is offered. Why is it offered? Because a karban hashutven is brought. So now, at this stage, that karban could either be owned by the father or by the sons. But the next line tells you it must be the sons. Ve'ein mamirinba. But you cannot do tmura. Tmura won't happen. Now, I amar bishlama kanya lehu. Hainu de'ein mamirinba da'ave la kishutfen. Vishutfen lo matzu mamirin. He says, look, there's a halacha by tmura that even though a karban can be brought as shutfen, tmura cannot be done by shutfen. And so remember, tmura is where you attempt to swap out the karban. So that doesn't work by partners. Only a carbon owned by a single person, where there's one person responsible, one owner, can tmura happen. So if the carbon here is brought but not subject to tmura, doesn't that prove that the children did inherit?
To clarify, the person that can use tmura is the mekadesh, right? Not the mechape?
Yes.
Okay. Who I understand is dead. Ella, so the Gemara says, "E amar lo kan yeluhu," and if you'll say that it wasn't acquired by them, emure namri limru. And this is one of the most complicated arguments, which is they should be able to do tmura. And now you'll tell me, wait, what? Who's going to do tmura if it was inherited by two sons? So who's going to do tmura? The father, who is, need I remind you, dead. What's the other options? The sons. Very good. So, very good. So the Gemara is saying something very nuanced, which is that the sons will be able to do tmura because they own it. But it's not defined as a karban ha-shutvin because it's being brought for their father. Hold the thought for a second. Let's finish the Gemara and then let's reflect. And the Gemara says that doesn't prove anything. Shiny hatam, that case is different. Amar kra im hamir yamir. Because now Shlomo will correctly say, oh, come on. Wait, what is going on? Isn't it the Makdish who's Meimer? So the answer is, well, so what would you have said? What does that prove? The can do tmura. So you'll say, but the Makdish is dead. So you'd say, well, maybe the kids are become like the Makdish. Oh, and then the Gemara says, no, we have a Gzirda Katuv. You know why they can do Tmura? It's a special Pasuk. Now, we always have to ask by Gzirda Katuv. When you have a Pasuk, what can the Pasuk be doing? It can either be giving you an exception or confirming a Svara, right? Meaning, you could have something that's not obvious, the pasuk needs to tell you that it's the case, or it can tell you this doesn't make any sense, but it's an exception. So, by tmura, is it that the reason that the heirs can do tmura is because they are now taking the place of their father, who is the Makdish? And the pasuk is just telling that? Or is it saying they don't take the place of the Makdish, but nevertheless, there's a special pasuk that allows yorshim to do tmura? But the Gemara says that either way, we have a pasuk, which is im hamer yamir. It says, if he shall do tmura, but with a double language, from which we learn lirabot et hayoresh. This includes the yoresh. What? Can. Echad meimer. So the Gemara lirabot yoresh, but only one. Echad yoresh echad meimer vein shnayim emirin. But it has to be only one of them. So matkiv la Rav Yaakov minar pakod el meyata gabi meiser dechtiv. But what about by meiser? It says v'imgol yigal lirabot et hayoresh. That by meiser sheni. So if the person redeems it, we from the double language we learn. So the halacha is that if the person himself redeems his meiser sheni, he has to add a fifth, right? A fifth to the value. Okay, but not a third party, but if the Yoresh does it, so then the Yoresh is considered the owner, and therefore he has to add the fifth. Is that only when there's one Yoresh and not two Yorshim? And the Gemara says, no, that's not true. By Meiser Sheni, you can co-own it. So the Gemara says, well, yeah, Shiny Meiser, Degabe Avon Nami Ite Bishotafut. Because their father could have owned Meiser Sheni as a partner. He didn't, but he could have in principle. And therefore, it is not contradictory for them to own it. Good. So let me read three more a few more lines, and then let's go back, and we might have to analyze this again. So I'm really Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Ashi, Umina. But now I have a question in that case itself. If you say that they acquire it, that's why one of them can at least do Tamura, because he is the owner. But if he doesn't even own it, I don't understand. You just said that the father owns it, because that's how it is not defined as a Karban HaShutfin partnership. Because it needs to be owned by the father in order for it to be subject to Tamura. But then you say that the heirs can do it, which implies that they own it. But if they own it, it's owned in partnership. You can't have it both ways. If it's owned by the father, then the reason the sons can't do Tamura is because they don't own it. And if they do own it, then they can't do Tamura because there are two of them. So which one is it? Right? So, Va'amar Rabbi Avav Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And this is where Shlomo had said before, wait a second, how makdish mosif chomesh, the mitkaper or the tmura? Sorry, tmura is by the mitkaper, is the makdish adds chomesh. Mitkaper is the tmura. Right? Vatori mishalosh chayar tovad ana shelo. So the Gemara says, aha, mikiva lo mechapra, mikufya mechapra. The carbon does, now what is mikufya and what is mikufya and mikiva? So what's kavua?
Permanent?
Yeah, permanent or set, essential. And kufya is not essential, incidental. So Rav Ashi says the karban doesn't atone for the sins of the heirs by its essence because it was separated for their father and they don't acquire it. And therefore, their father really owns it. It is not, and that's why it can be brought as a mincha. And nevertheless, they can do tamura because they also do own it. Because they own it mikufya, but not mikifa. Yes. They get kapara incidentally, but not fundamentally. And that's not enough to make it a karban Hashutfin, but is enough to make them owners so that they can be the ones who do Tmura.
Wait, so does the father get a kapara then?
Does the father get it? That's a very good question. Very good. And that brings you back to, if you remember, that was the other part of the Gemara that I told you to look back over, which was the Gemara on Daf Hei Amud Aleph, which was the question of, yes, of Karban after Mita, where the Gemara says that you can bring a Karban after death, but it will be, right, that, right, that, and that is proof of the possibility of Kasher Vein Maratzin. Very good. Okay, good. The third Gemara you have to look at, but before we even look at, well, I'm debating whether we should do this. Let me quickly read the Gemara on Dav Zayin. The Gemara on Dav Zayin says as follows. Rava says, well, Rava says a lot of things on Dav Zayin, but one second. Open it up. Sorry, it was Zion of Bet. Oh, no, you put Zion of Bet. V'amarava, Ola haba lachar mita, and Ola bought after death, shecht the b'shinei kodesh, psula. If you shecht it, b'shinei kodesh, meaning you bring an Ola as a chatat, then it is pasul. B'shinei bailim, but if you change the owner, ksherim. De'ein bailim lachar mita. Because there is no other after death. What? I'm sorry, what? But didn't we just say the sons own it? Wait, didn't we just say that? They own it, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to do Tamura. But now we're saying that there is...
Wait, but we established they can't do Tamura.
Correct. No, they can do Tamura. No, sorry. They right. They can't do Tumorah, but they can bring the Mincha, because they're owners and they're not owners at the same time.
Yes.
But now we say, but there are no owners after death. But wait, we just said? Hold that thought. But now, let's read the words. The Gemara here says, there is no owner after death. Rav Pinchas Breder of Ami Amar, Yesh Bailam Lachar Mita. Rav Pinchas says, no, there are owners after death. Who? The heirs. Omele Rav Ashil, Rav Pinchas Breder of Ami, Dafka Kamar. The Kamar Mar. Yesh Bailam Lachar Mita. Are you saying that there is an owner after death? Ubailatu Ola Achrite. And therefore, he must bring another. And that's why you have to bring a different Ola, because it's brought for the own ones. Odoma, di iiko kama ase gabe mechapa. Or you're saying that if the heir has potential sins, then that can be brought. But if it was shechted for the wrong owner, then the heir is not required to bring another. Meaning, it has the potential to be mechaper, but it doesn't have to be brought for the owner. Amrlai dafka came. He said, no. Right? Meaning, what's the question? Is it the carbon is the heir's, and therefore it must be brought by the heir, and therefore if you have shinui bailim, not only is it invalid, but once you invalidate it, you need to bring another one because you became obligated in the carbon? Or is it saying that, look, you can't bring it for the wrong person, but if he brings it for the wrong person, then it just won't work. But since the heir isn't really bringing it for his own sins, he's only getting kapara incidentally, then if you invalidate the karban, then you don't have to bring another karban. You just lost the benefit of this karban. You don't have to bring another one. How much do you believe that this karban is really owned? And what does he say? Dafka keimna. What's dafka keimna? I meant it explicitly, meaning, no, he really is the owner. And not only is the heir the owner, he's the owner such that if you bring it, shelo l'shem bailim, you need to... Hey, so you need to bring another one. Very good. So, very good, exactly. That's the right look you should have on your face. So now... Okay. Now let's take a step back. Okay, these are the Gemaras, and this is what we got to figure out. Is that if you have noticed, you might have noticed, that between the three Gemara that we've seen on Karban Yoresh, the Gemara seems to, how shall we say, be speaking out of two sides of its mouth, right? It's the Gemara is not consistent in how it is treating the Yoresh, right? In certain respects, the Gemara treats it as he is the owner. In certain respects, it says he is not the owner. In certain respects, it says that the dead guy is the owner. In certain ones, it says, well, the dead guy can't be the owner, right? Remember, on Daf Hey, it said the dead guy, the Hey Vav, the dead guy must be the owner, because if it isn't the owner and the kids are the owners, then the Mincha would be invalid because a mincha can't be owned by partners. But on Diamond Bay, right? What? Well, we say it can't just be owned by the kids, because if it was owned by just the kids, the mincha couldn't be brought. So it must also be owned by the father. On the other hand, it must be owned by the kids because of the case of Tzmura. So the Gemara ends up saying they own it and they don't own it. They get kapara mi kufya, they don't get kapara mi kiva. Then in Dav Zion, the Gemara brings a machloket as to whether, if it's shechted after death, shinui bailim is relevant, because Rava says it's not relevant because there's no owner after death, which if you read that pshat sounds like no owner. And then Rav Pinchas says, there is an owner, a very real owner, namely the kids. So now what implications do we have here? Karban Yoresh, possibilities. One possibility is the simple pshat of Rava is who owns it? Nobody. Not the dead guy, not the Yershim, nobody. Yes, that's Rava's implication. Rav Pinchas' implication is who owns it? The kids, fully. So much so the Gemara literally asked him, do you mean that fully, or do you mean that not fully? And he said, no, I mean that, ad hasof. In case you are going to try to wiggle out of this and say he only sort of meant it. No, I mean it as much as anyone could mean it. Dafka keimna. It's not like, right, sometimes you're like, well, how much seriously does he mean it? No, here the Gemara literally asks him, how seriously do you mean the words that he owns it? And they're like, no, I mean it in any way you can think of that I mean it. That he doesn't say. All he says is whatever he was asked, the answer to that question is yes. What was he being asked? That's a good question. But whatever he was asked, the answer to that question was a resounding yes.
So you might say that.
Okay, this is like a game of Jeopardy. I know the answer, but now I got to figure out what the question was. Right?
Yeah, I still never got that about Jeopardy. Yeah, it's just like a gimmick, I think. What is yes and again?
What is yes and again? But now Alex Trebek is dead, so. Lo Shabbat. What? Who's the host now? Who's the host?
Fiala?
She was for a little bit, right?
Yeah, like two people. One of them was like someone who's won a lot of games. And the other
host of Jeopardy Now. Let's see. Who is it? It is Maya Bialik. She is.
And also someone else.
And Ken Jennings. Maya,
it's
so
awesome. Nice Jewish girl running one of the biggest television shows in the world.
It's possible, I think.
Yes. Okay. I'm very happy that Maya Bialik was hosting Jeopardy. Yes. No, legitimately, yes. I'm happy about it. And I mean, you guys, now I'm dating myself, but it really was fun to watch Ken Jennings. It was so fun. It was so fun. When he, what? Exactly. It was when I was in high school. But he won 75 games in a row, and it was unreal. What? It was so much fun. It was great. He was so good at it because he actually writes trivia questions. It was wonderful. Also, there were just a lot of fun moments. You know, like the when as a from Mormon who doesn't drink any alcohol, he still got every question right in the category of mixing drinks. That was every single one. There were a lot of fun moments in that 70, you know, 15 weeks. It was hysterical. And I was always proud as a high school kid when I got the, you know, final Jeopardies that he didn't get. Fun times. So that was not the point. The point of this was that we know the answer in the Gemara. We don't know the question, right? Meaning, we know that he said, yes, I really mean it. But the bigger question is, what did you mean exactly? And then you have this thing that the Gemara introduces, which is the notion that the Yoresh is and is not the owner at the same time. He's the owner for the purpose of Kapara. Because since Tmura goes by the Mechaper, right, not by the monetary owner, it goes by the Mechaper. Therefore, we need to figure out whether he's Mechaper. And the Gemara says, well, he is and he isn't. Literally, that's what it says. He's Mekiva, lo Mechapra, Mikofio Mechapra. He's not the essential one getting Kapara, but he is incidental. And apparently, the incidental ownership of Kapara is sufficient for the purposes of Tmura. But as we learn on Dav Zayin, maybe not enough for Shinui Bailim. We have some complexity that we need to deal with. Okay. Before we start plugging it in, let us review the Yesodot, the principles that we've been establishing over the last few weeks that will help us understand the sugya of Karban Yoresh and the complexity of it. So, what... Are you okay? Good. So, what factors are we going to need to figure out Karban Yoresh? Very good. One is we need to figure out ownership. But as we have talked about, by Karbanot, there are two aspects of ownership that are potentially relevant. One is monetary ownership. The other is the designation of Kapara, right? For whom is the Karban being brought to be Mechaper? Right? So the first question we have to ask is, okay, what ownership are we even looking for? Yes? That's one question we need to ask. Agreed? Second question we need to ask is what is the status of Yoresh? Because as we've seen, the Yoresh can inherit monetary rights from his parent or sometimes inherits something else, statuses from his parents, or takes his father's place for certain things. Now, the aspects of ownership that are monetary in nature can pass through to the Yoresh on the monetary understanding of Yerusha. But the unique ownership of Karbanot, i.e., the status of the Mechaper, right? That's a little bit harder to understand how that might pass monetarily, because that's not really a monetary thing. But the more we talk about Yerusha as not only being a monetary thing, but being about the child taking the place of the father and therefore being able to inherit statuses, inheriting rights that aren't monetary, the more we're going to be able to understand that maybe even if the child, let's say, doesn't inherit the money, because there are different parts of this, meaning if the father didn't really own it monetarily, because you assume that Karbanot aren't owned monetarily, then he shouldn't be able to pass it down and be Yerusha if Yerusha is solely a monetary institution. But let's say that you hold that the only relevant type of ownership in Karban is not monetary, is Bailim. But you also think that a Yoresh is not merely a mere monetary relationship, it is a mimali mikamo, it's the child taking the place of the parent, and therefore certain statuses come with it, then you could both maintain that the father never really owned the karbon in a monetary sense, and nevertheless the son will own it in whatever way the father did, because Yerusha, or at least the son's Yerusha, may not be limited to monetary ownership. And then Evan says, okay, fine. Whatever conglomerate of things that you were going to do that you're going to come up with, both on the understanding of what is the ownership of the karbon and therefore what relationship did the father have to the karbon, and then two, based on how you understand Yerusha, which of those connections to the karbon could the son have inherited? The third question you have to ask is, why does the Gemara seem to have a mess of being willing to apply those standards for certain aspects of karbanot and certain karbanot and not for others? Because let's say you come up with a super strong formulation and say a son inherits all statuses from his father no matter what, and therefore the son is the full owner. Let's say you came up with that formulation. Then Evan notes, that's great, because that explains why a son can bring a chatat for his father. And then you would say, wait, that's not true, though, because a son... Very good. So Evan will say, and that's why we needed Gzeirat HaKatuv, that chatat shemetu ba'aleha, that if a chatat where the owner dies, the chatat dies. And you'd have to come up with a chiddush that it's not a chatat shemetu ba'aleha dies because there is no owner, but it's simply the fact that the owner died, even though we believe there's still another owner, namely the son. But you're right. What we then have to do is, after we establish ownership that the father had, to establish the nature of Yerusha such that we can figure out which aspect of connection the father had to his karbon can be passed down, we then need to look at each of the cases independently. Why is it that by chatat, the Yoresh cannot bring the karbon? It may be exerted a katuv, that's true, but we need to explain that. And then we need to figure out, right, then we need to figure out all the other karbanot, right? Why is it that the Gemara assumes that he can bring the olah? And even then the Gemara says, okay, then we need to plug it in and say, well, the Gemara says that even when he does inherit it, so let's say you wanted to go with the strong version, that the son takes the place of the father, then what would you expect, let's say in olah, which doesn't have the gzeirat hakatuv of chatat shemetu ba'aleha, what would you expect the relationship of the child to be to the karban? The full owner. The problem is that we know he's not the full owner. How do I know he's not the full owner in any way, shape, or form? Because a few ways. How do I know that he's not the full owner? One, if he was the full owner, it would invalidate the mincha when there were two yarshim. And the Gemara already said that it doesn't invalidate the mincha when there are two yarshim, because the father still owns it. which means that the Son doesn't fully own it, because if the Son fully owns it, then the Son's fully own it, and the Son's fully own it, then it's co-owned, and if it's a mincha and it's co-owned, then it's a mincha rashutfin, and a mincha rashutfin is bad. Piece of evidence one. Second is, second, what is the other one? What's the other piece of evidence? How else do I know that the owner, that the Yoresh doesn't have full ownership? What is the other piece of evidence that he doesn't have the full ownership? The Gemara, Mikiva lo Mechapra, Mikufya Mechapra, that even though we entertain the possibility of getting Kapara, we say that he gets incidental and not essential Kapara, meaning the Gemara is telling you that even in the world of Kapara, he is only sort of the owner and not the full owner. That's what it's telling you. Mikiva Mechapra, right? Mikiva lo Mechapra, Mikufya Mechapra. You understand, by the way, why I said first we need to spend 2 days and understand the nature of Yerusha. Because only once we assemble the pieces of what is the nature of ownership, what is the nature of Yerusha, what is the nature of Kapara, can we then all bring it back together and say, well, what is the Gemara doing? Because the Gemara seems to have a very nuanced hybrid view as to the way in which the heir owns or does not own the karba. Yes? Are we agreed that that is now our goal? Our goal is to somehow plug in these pieces. In order to plug in those pieces, what we're going to need to do is probably reread that Gemara that we, you know, and read it more carefully. But, and I know I hate to do this to you. I'm lying. I love to do this to you, but I also hate to do it. Obviously, like, is that you would think that we would be able to fully understand it from here, but obviously we wouldn't think that because there are more pieces that we need to assemble to understand it. So let's take one of them today because, as I said, the major, what is going to be, right? So now if we think of the, if we think of the range, right? The ring. It's fine. Just imagine I'm writing for now. Right? If we think of the range of concluding that by the end of the day, we think the Yoresh owns the carbon in every respect at one extreme, to the opposite extreme, which is the Yoresh basically doesn't own it. Right? So obviously the truth is somewhere in the middle because we've seen ways in which the Yoresh does and which ways in which
they don't.
So in order, what do we need to do to zero in on the way that the Yoresh does and the way the Yoresh does not own the carbon? What is the best way, I think, methodologically to do it? Right, meaning it's not just which cases; it's that we start with exactly. We start with the extreme cases, right? Because by the extreme cases, what we can do is we can narrow it down. Yes, and this will help us understand Yoresh also, but what we need to do is look at the extreme cases, the cases where we know that it can't go this far. So as we said, what is the proof that there is some limit to the ability of the Yoresh to become the owner of the carbon? What is the proof that there must be a limit? It can't be that the son is just the father. What is the number one case that proves we need to tone it down just a little bit? What is the case? What case do we know the son is not the same as the father? Even more extreme, the one that's right. No, by Tura he is Mamir. Right. What is it? Chatat. Very good. Chatat. Because everyone agrees, chatat shemetu ba'alah. Right, but very good. Now, Meir's right. So you could say that, no, he really is the owner, but there's gzeirat hakatuv, that if the owner, even one of the owners dies, then it goes to mita. But obviously, that's the case we need to test first. Because the case of chatat, where we are not open to the possibility that the son can bring it at all, And we don't entertain possibilities like, well, the sun is mechayfer mikiva, right? Mikufya, not mikiva. We just say, chad tshumetu ba'alea, that's it. That proves there must be a limit. Meir's right. It may not be a limit that tells you that the yoresh is not inherited. It may be a gzeir dakatuv that's unique to chatat. But we at least need to look at that case to figure out why is it that there is that hard limit that a yoresh cannot get kapara with a chata. So Meir has already advanced the thesis that chatat proves nothing. Chatat proves nothing. The chatat doesn't prove, well, it does prove something, but it proves nothing about Yoresh. It proves something about chatat, that chatat is unique, and therefore it makes sense that no matter how much ownership we're going to give the Yoresh, chatat cannot, under any circumstances, in no possible reality, anywhere in the multiverse, can it be that chatat can be brought if the owner dies. And that tells us a lot more about chatat than it does about yoresh. Good. Meir wants to defend that thesis. Give me proof that that thesis makes sense. That even if we thought that a yoresh inherited in every possible way, a chatat would still be exceptional. I think you're actually right. I think you're 100% right. I think chatat proves nothing about yoresh and everything about chatat. I think you're right. I think that's the easiest way of understanding the sugya. But what is the best proof? Right. And what would be the proof of that? So Evan says, well, there's a good svara. Is that, listen, you may have inherited, you may be the father, but chatat is more than that. Chatat is brought for a specific sin. What would be the test? How would I test it? Yeah. Oh, well, yes, we know that his son doesn't inherit in sins. Thank you. That's a pasuk. Well done. Is that what you were going to say? Good, good. So please say it for all of us. There you go. Ezekiel 18:20. No, that was good, yeah. Which says? Thank you, King James. Hebrew Rison, I'm sorry. But yes, Hanefesh Hachotet Hi Tamut. Well, okay, I should read. I will go back a few psukim, right? I'll go back one to Yud Zayin. Va'amartem. So very good. Yisrael says, I know why Chatat is unique. Chatat is unique because sin cannot be inherited. A carbon can be inherited, but a chatat, as Evan notes, is brought for a specific sin. And sin cannot be inherited. Right? That's Yisrael's formulation. And Yisrael has a good source. Yisrael says, listen, I don't need a briskorov, I don't need a stipler, I don't need a ritva and a rashba. I have Ezekiel. He's not wrong. The pasuk says, va'amartem, and you shall say, madua lo nasaha ben bavon ha'av. This sounds like an achron, only because I'm invoking it this way. But this is a pasuk in Yechezkel. And lest you ask, why doesn't the son carry the sin of the father? V'haben mishvat utztaka asa. Because the son did righteousness and justice. Et kol chukotai shamar. He kept all my mitzvot. V'yase otam chayo yechev, he keeps them, he shall live. You know why? Hanefesh hachoteit hi tamut. Because the soul that sins, it shall die. He shall die. She shall die. I don't know. The soul, the person. Lo yisa ba'avon ha'av. The son shall not carry the sins of the father. V'av lo yisa ba'avon ha'ben. And the father shall not carry the son's sins. Tzidkat hatzadik alav tihyeh. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him. Virishat harasha alav tihyeh. And the wickedness of the wicked one will be on him. So, Rabbi Skuratovsky is correct. For this you get Rabbi. That I don't need a rishon, I don't need an achron, I don't need any lomdus. You want to know why chatat is unique? Because chatat isn't about, it isn't just about inheriting the karbon. in order to bring a chatat, as Evan notes, you need to be linked to the sin. Chatat isn't about the person, it's about the sin. And children don't inherit the sins of their fathers, so said Ezekiel. Right? Yeah, good. It does sound more intimidating in English. I don't know why. What? Yeah? What? Yes. I didn't say. Yes? Yes. You don't think that this is one of the primary areas of research in Ezekiel studies? Yes. Yes, very good. But Perek Yechet and Yechezkel is super important because of this. So now we have Yechezkel, but there's another, but now...
Never mind. Apologies.
You missed Yechezkel.
No. I know the pasuk in Yechezkel.
I know. You missed the context.
I understand the context.
Okay, good, fine. Okay. Now, if I want to go even farther and prove that it's not enough to take the place of the father, but that chatat is brought for a specific sin, and therefore it could be that the son fully takes the status of the father, and nevertheless, he won't be able to bring his chatat. Very good. So Evan says, aha, there's a good halachic proof to this concept, which is that even for a sinner himself, yeah, let's say you have a person who's a terrible sinner. He both was Mechal Shabbat, and he ate Chelev, and he slept with 16 of the Arayot, right? Different Arayot, so he now has 18 Karbanot Chata to his name, and he brings the Karban Chata that was designated for eating of Chelev for the fact that he slept with his sister.
Accidentally.
This guy is very spiritually unlucky, yes. Very spiritually unlucky. Then the carbon is also invalid. So what does that prove, Evan? What that proves is that the fact that someone bringing a chatat for himself, for his sin, still invalidates the karban if it's for a different sin, that shows that by chatat, the fact that an heir cannot bring a chatat does not prove that what? That he doesn't own the karban. Because chatat isn't about ownership. Because does the guy who accidentally had chelev and violated Shabbat and slept with his sister, does he own all three karbanot? Yes. Does he have to bring all three of them? Yes. But if he brought one instead of the other, it doesn't work. That tells you a lot more about chatat and nothing about ownership. And therefore, Meir is 100% correct. That, yes, chatat is exceptional, but no, that doesn't necessarily prove anything about the uniqueness of Yoresh, and it proves everything about the uniqueness of chatat. Now, let's say I wanted to bring a source that links those two halachic realities. Let's say I wanted a source that would support Meir, that would say that the reason that chatat is unique is because chatat is unique, and not necessarily, and therefore it can't prove anything about Yoresh. Where would I get such a source? A Mishnah, very good. A Mishnah, not actually our first Mishnah. Our first Mishnah is pretty good. The Mishnah number two is even better. This is a Mishnah in Kritut. Hamafrish chatata umet. If someone separates his chatat and dies, lo yivienu beno tachtav. His son can't bring it. And lo yivienu mechet al chet. You can't bring your chatat from one sin for a different sin. Afilo hifrish al chelev jachal emesh. Not only that, but even if you ate, this guy's really spiritually unlucky. He accidentally ate forbidden fat yesterday, and he ate forbidden fat accidentally today, and he separates the chatat for eating chelev by accident that he did today on that which he did yesterday. So it's the same person and the same category of sin. It's just that it's two different instances of violating the exact same sin. Lo yivien al chelev shachal hayom. Shen ne'emar, because the pasuk says, karbano al chatato. Because the pasuk says about chatat, his karban, his sacrifice is brought for his sin, which Chazal darshan as, ad sheyehe karbano l'shem chatato, until his karban is brought for his sin. So the Mishnah, if even before I get to the Gemara, the Mishnah seems to be thinking very much along Meir's lines, which is, listen, the fact that the son can't bring the karban for his father's sin does not prove that the son didn't inherit the karban. Because even if you have a guy who has owes multiple karban out for different sins, and even if you have a guy who is so unlucky that he accidentally had forbidden fats every day for the last month, and he has 30 lined up karban out, and he brings today's for yesterday's for the same guy, for the same sin, just two different days in which he committed the same sin, the chatat is invalid, and the Mishnah quotes a pasuk. The Mishnah quotes a pasuk, not the Gemara, right? Usually you get the Mishnah with the halacha, and the Gemara says the drasha. No, the Mishnah here comes and says, let me tell you why. Karbano al chatato, because the karban is brought for his chait, ad shehe karbano l'shem chatato, until you bring the karban for his sin. And therefore, Meir plus Evan plus Israel Isaac will join together and say, the reason that chatat proves nothing about Yerush is because karbanot chatat are unique. Obviously, the son can't inherit the sin, but it's more than that. Not only can the son not inherit the sin, but even someone who is the owner of both karbanot cannot bring the karban of eating chelev on Sunday for the karban of eating chelev on Monday, or the karban of eating chelev on Monday for the karban of eating on Sunday, because karban, chatat, is defined by the sin for which it was designated, not the category of sin. The specific act of this sin done by this person at this time in this place is that chatat. And if you don't do that, you bring him anything else. And the son didn't do that. Exactly. The son may be the full owner, just like the father is the owner of both the karban for his sin that he did on Sunday and the one he did on Monday. And nevertheless, if you mix up which one the karban is being brought for, it is invalid. Once you say that's invalid, there is no reason to believe that the reason that a son cannot bring a chatat has anything whatsoever to do with the fact that he's not the owner of the karban. Good. Now, if it was that simple, I would have left you at the Mishnah. But as you see, I gave you a lot of the Gemara because the Gemara will add dimensions to this. But yes, I agree with Meir that I don't think chatat is a kasha. That doesn't mean that the Gemara's attempt to explain why it's not a kasha, because the Gemara doesn't just say obvious. The Gemara doesn't even pull a Israel Isaac and say Yechezkel 18. Instead, it goes through a series of drasha that we'll see, I guess, at this point tomorrow, because I still take Shlomo's questions. Shlomo, yes. You have to specify.
But he is makdish without specifying.
You have to specify.
But what happens if he wasn't?
Is that a stomach or?
There's no stomach by chata, remember?
Yeah, but at the level of makdish, what happens?
What happens?
Yes. Who's makdish achatas without specification?
Makdish without specifying. Right, meaning I guess there to be two possibilities. One is until you designate it, it's nothing, or because you didn't designate it, would be invalid to begin with, right? Those would, I guess, be the two logical possibilities there, right?
I guess the third might be that you would be allowed to specify. Well, the first is that you're allowed to specify it later.
The first is that you're allowed to specify it later. It's just until then, it has no identity, or that.
Well, but it tells the identity of a chatos, just not.
Oh, maybe. So what does he do if you're makdish like, a chatos?
You might say that it wasn't makdish at all.
Well, cool. And then it dies.
Very good.
What is, let's see, makdish chatos stam. What happens if you makdish chatos stam?
for that matter, if you're Matthew or Pesach stunt, which I imagine would be sort of the same thing. Because Pesach, you also have to be Makdish for same. But no, you don't have to be Makdish for Shem Ophel. You just need to do the Avodish, but Avodis is the Shem Ophel.
Let's see. So, what is it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I So, this, I think this depends on the Sugya on Mem Aleph, which deals with. Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to look at it. If you marked it, I'm not sure. I have to look at it. Okay, I'll try to look it up. In the meantime, we'll pick up with this tomorrow. But again, our goal is, like I said, is to slowly zero in on the definition of Karban Yeresh by first narrowing it down by testing the exceptional cases. Chatat, as we've already seen, is exceptional, but what we'll do tomorrow is read this Gemara in Krita, where we can fully explain why we're rejecting it, and then we can slowly, you know, figure out exactly what is the relationship of the Yarish to it, again, depending both on the nature of Yerusha and the nature of ownership in Karban, and obviously the unique Karban and their requirements in each case. We'll do that tomorrow.